Chapter 18. He dared not come out again. When he sat down, he dared not get up. He dared not raise his eyes to anybody's face. He felt reluctant to look upon the sea, or up to the sky. The world was fading before his great fear of giving himself away. The old ship was his last friend. He was not afraid of her. He knew every inch of her deck. But at her too he hardly dared to look, for fear of finding he could see less than the day before. A great incertitude enveloped him. The horizon was gone. The sky mingled darkly with the sea. Who was this figure standing over yonder? What was this thing lying down there? And a frightful doubt of the reality of what he could see made even the remnant of sight that remained to him an added torment, a pitfall always open for his miserable pretense. He was afraid to stumble inexcusably over something, to say a fatal yes or no to a question. The hand of God was upon him, but it could not tear him away from his child. And, as if in a nightmare of humiliation, every featureless man seemed an enemy. He let his hand fall heavily on the table. Mr. Van Wyck, arms down, chin on breast, with a gleam of white teeth pressing on the lower lip, meditated on Stern's The Game's Up. The Serang, of course, does not know. Nobody, said Captain Wally, with assurance. Ah, yes. Nobody. Very well. Can you keep it up to the end of the trip? That is the last under the agreement with Massey. Captain Wally got up and stood erect, very stately, with the great white beard lying like a silver breastplate over the awful secret of his heart. Yes, that was the only hope there was for him of ever seeing her again, of securing the money, the last he could do for her, before he crept away somewhere useless, a burden, a reproach to himself. His voice faltered. Think of it. Never see her anymore. The only human being besides myself now on earth that can remember my wife. She's just like her mother. Lucky the poor woman is where there are no tears shed over those they loved on earth, and that remain to pray not to be led into temptation, because, I suppose, the blessed know the secret of grace in God's dealings with his created children. He swayed a little, said with austere dignity, I don't. I know only the child he has given me. And he began to walk. Mr. Van Wyck, jumping up, saw the full meaning of the rigid head, the hesitating feet, the vaguely extended hand. His heart was beating fast. He moved a chair aside, and instinctively advanced, as if to offer his arm. But Captain Wally passed him by, making for the stairs quite straight. He could not see me at all out of his line, Van Wyck thought, with a sort of awe. Then going to the head of the stairs, he asked a little tremulously, what is it like a mist-like? Dot, Captain Wally, halfway down, stopped, and turned round undismayed to answer. It is as if the light were ebbing out of the world. Have you ever watched the ebbing sea on an open stretch of sands withdrawing farther and farther away from you? It is like this, only there will be no flood to follow. Never. It is as if the sun were growing smaller, the stars going out one by one. There can't be many left that I can see by this. But I haven't had the courage to look of late. Dottie must have been able to make out Mr. Van Wyck, because he checked him by an authoritative gesture, and a stoical, I can get about alone yet. It was as if he had taken his line, and would accept no help from men, after having been cast out, like a presumptuous titan, from his heaven. Mr. Van Wyck, arrested, seemed to count the footsteps right out of earshot. He walked between the tables, tapping smartly with his heels, took up a paper knife, dropped it after a vague glance along the blade, then happening upon the piano, struck a few chords again and again, vigorously, standing up before the keyboard with an attentive poise of the head like a piano tuner. Closing it, he pivoted on his heels brusquely, avoided the little terrier sleeping trustfully on crossed forepaws, came upon the stairs next, and, as though he had lost his balance on the top step, ran down headlong out of the house. His servants, beginning to clear the table, heard him mutter to himself evil words, no doubt, down there, and then after a pause go away with a strolling gait in the direction of the wharf. The bulwarks of the Sofala lying alongside the bank made a low, black wall on the undulating contour of the shore. Two masts and a funnel uprose from behind it with a great rake, as if about to fall. A solid, square elevation in the middle bore the ghostly shapes of white boats, the curves of davits, lines of rail and stanchions, all confused and mingling darkly everywhere. But low down, amidships, a single lighted port stared out on the night, perfectly round, like a small full moon, whose yellow beam caught a patch of wet mud, the edge of trodden grass, two turns of heavy cable wound round the foot of a thick wooden post in the ground. Mr. Van Wyck, peering alongside, heard a muzzy boastful voice apparently jeering at a person called Prendergast. It mouthed abuse thickly, choked, then pronounced very distinctly the word earthy, and chuckled. Glass tinkled tremulously. All these sounds came from the lighted port. Mr. Van Wyck hesitated, stooped. It was impossible to look through, unless he went down into the mud. Stern, he said, half aloud. The drunken voice within said gladly, Stern of course. Look at him blink. Look at him. Stern, Wally, Massey. Massey, Wally, Stern. But Massey's the best. You can't come over him. He would just love to see you starve. Mr. Van Wyck moved away, made out farther forward a shadowy head stuck out from under the awnings, as if on the watch, and spoke quietly in Malay, Is the mate asleep? No. Here, at your service. In a moment Stern appeared, walking as noiselessly as a cat on the wharf. It's so jolly dark, and I had no idea you would be down tonight. What's this horrible raving? Asked Mr. Van Wyck, as if to explain the cause of a shudder that ran over him audibly. Jack's broken out on a drunk. That's our second. It's his way. He will be right enough by tomorrow afternoon, only Mr. Massey will keep on worrying up and down the deck. We had better get away. He muttered suggestively of a talk-pee at the house. He had long desired to effect an entrance there, but Mr. Van Wyck nonchalantly demurred. It would not, he feared, be quite prudent, perhaps, and the opaque black shadow under one of the two big trees left at the landing place swallowed them up, impenetrably dense, by the side of the wide river, that seemed to spin in two threads of glitter the light of a few big stars dropped here and there upon its outspread and flowing stillness. The situation is grave beyond doubt, Mr. Van Wyck said. Ghost-like in their white clothes they could not distinguish each other's features, and their feet made no sound on the soft earth. A sort of purring was heard. Mr. Stern felt gratified by such a beginning. I thought, Mr. Van Wyck, a gentleman of your sort, would see at once how awkwardly I was situated. Yes, very. Obviously his health is bad. Perhaps he's breaking up. I see, and he himself is well aware. I assume I am speaking to a man of sense. He is well aware that his legs are giving out. His legs are. Mr. Stern was disconcerted, and then turned sulky. You may call it his legs if you like. What I want to know is whether he intends to clear out quietly. That's a good one too. His legs. Pooh. Why, yes. Only look at the way he walks. Mr. Van Wyck took him up in a perfectly cool and undoubting tone. He questioned, however, is whether your sense of duty does not carry you too far from your true interest. After all, I too could do something to serve you. You know who I am. Everybody along the straits has heard of you, sir. Mr. Van Wyck presumed that this meant something favorable. Stern had a soft laugh at this pleasantry. He should think so. To the opening statement, that the partnership agreement was to expire at the end of this very trip, he gave an attentive assent. He was aware. One heard of nothing else on board all the blessed day long. As to Massey, it was no secret that he was in a jolly deep hole with these worn-out boilers. He would have to borrow somewhere a couple of hundred first of all to pay off the captain. And then he would have to raise money on mortgage upon the ship for the new boilers, that is, if he could find a lender at all. At best it meant loss of time, a break in the trade, short earnings for the year, and there was always the danger of having his connection filched away from him by the Germans. It was whispered about that he had already tried two firms. Neither would have anything to do with him. Ship too old, and the man too well known in the place. Mr. Stern's final rapid winking remained buried in the deep darkness, sibilating with his whispers. Supposing, then, he got the loan, Mr. Van Wyck resumed in a deliberate undertone, on your own showing he's more than likely to get a mortgagee's man thrust upon him as captain. For my part, I know that I would make that very stipulation myself, if I had to find the money. And as a matter of fact, I am thinking of doing so. It would be worth my while in many ways. Do you see how this would bear on the case under discussion? Thank you, sir. I am sure you couldn't get anybody that would care more for your interests. Well, it suits my interest that Captain Wally should finish his time. I shall probably take a passage with you down the Straits. If that can be done, I'll be on the spot when all these changes take place, and in a position to look after your interests. Mr. Van Wyck, I want nothing better. I am sure I am infinitely. I take it, then, that this may be done without any trouble. Well, sir, what risk there is can't be helped, but speaking to you as my employer now, the thing is more safe than it looks. If anybody had told me of it, I wouldn't have believed it, but I have been looking on myself. That old Serang has been trained up to the game. There's nothing the matter with his limbs, sir. He's got used to doing things himself in a remarkable way. And let me tell you, sir, that Captain Wally, poor man, is by no means useless. Fact. Let me explain to you, sir. He stiffens up that old monkey of a Malay, who knows well enough what to do. Why, he must have kept captain's watches in all sorts of country ships off and on for the last 25 years. These natives, sir, as long as they have a white man close at the back, will go on doing the right thing most surprisingly well, even if left quite to themselves. Only the white man must be of the sort to put starch into them, and the captain is just the one for that. Why, sir, he has drilled him so well that now he needs hardly speak at all. I have seen that little wrinkled ape made to take the ship out of Pangu Bay on a blowy morning, and on all through the islands, take her out first rate, sir, dodging under the old man's elbow, and in such quiet style, that you could not have told for the life of you which of the two was doing the work up there. That's where our poor friend would be still of use to the ship, even if he could no longer lift a foot, sir. Provided the Serang does not know that there's anything wrong. He doesn't. Naturally not. Quite beyond his apprehension. They aren't capable of finding out anything about us, sir. You seem to be a shrewd man, said Mr. Van Wyck in a choked mutter, as though he were feeling sick. You'll find me a good enough servant, sir. Mr. Stern hoped now for a handshake at least, but unexpectedly, with a, "Hats this?" Better not to be seen together, Mr. Van Wyck's white shape wavered, and instantly seemed to melt away in the black air under the roof of boughs. The mate was startled. Yes. There was that faint thumping clatter. He stole out silently from under the shade. The lighted porthole shone from afar. His head swam with the intoxication of sudden success. What a thing it was to have a gentleman to deal with. He crept aboard, and there was something weird in the shadowy stretch of empty decks, echoing with shouts and blows proceeding from a darker part amidships. Mr. Massey was raging before the door of the berth. The drunken voice within flowed on undisturbed in the violent racket of kicks. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.